All right. Hello and welcome once again to the Spitballing Podcast. My name is Ben Rogers, and I'm joined by Jamie Newberg. This is the Texas Rangers Podcast, and there's plenty of good things to talk about in Rangerland. Jamie, this team just continues to roll. 10 consecutive home series wins. I would just, before we even get going, just want to know what's in your heart and what's on your mind when it comes to our Texas Rangers.
You know, they're playing with some swagger now. It's not that they haven't been before, but they're playing the kind of baseball right now where they don't need to get a complete game shutout to win, and they don't need to explode for 8 runs. And they're doing enough to win games. They're winning them close. There's some downside to having so many close games, like we've talked about before, in terms of what it does to the bullpen. But you know, the fact remains they're winning a lot of baseball right now, a lot of baseball games. They're doing it with different people every night. They're doing it with key contributors that started the year on the farm. It's that next man up theory. It's working even with guys getting hurt. And they're playing a really good brand of baseball right now.
It's a lot of fun. And plus to have the human Swiss Army knife and Jerks and Profar. I mean, he could play any position and play it exceedingly well. Watching him stretch at first pace was just nuts. This guy is truly special, and you know, I don't even know if he would have been on my radar if it wasn't for you and the Newberg Report putting him on there many, many years ago. And with the down to a little bit of a string issue, no problem. Just plug in Profar. What are your thoughts on the youngster so far?
Well, it's kind of incredible. You know, it has been forever since we've been talking about this guy, but he's still an extremely young ball player, and you know, his prime is ahead of him, and the way he's come up and played even more productively against big league pitching than he had been in AAA just speaks to the level level of player that he is. And his versatility defensively has obviously not hurt him at the plate, as he's playing in positions he's not familiar with, some that he's really unfamiliar with, and he's been just dynamic at the plate. And like you said, that Swiss Army knife capability allows Jeff Banister to do a lot of things. Get guys off their feet if they need a rest, get a couple bats out of the lineup if they just need some time away. And he's an incredibly valuable guy to have on the bench, to the point where he's not really a bench player. He's just a versatile starter that allows you to do a lot of different things with the lineup.
Man, I feel like Joey Gallo is lurking in the wings, you know, ready to come in. If there was a long-term need at first base, I think it'd be Gallo. If there's a long-term need at third base, I really think it'd be Gallo. But Profar's here. He's red hot. He's getting multiple hits almost every time he's in the lineup. For me, no matter how excited I get about Rugi or Profar or Mazzara or any of these young guys, I still, at the end of the day, I actually think Gallo's going to be the best of all of them. Am I crazy?
Well, I mean, it's fair to say that if he fulfills his potential and he looks like he's done the things this year in AAA to, you know, give you hope that he's more capable of doing that than we might have thought of late last summer. If he does become the player he can be, then yeah. I mean, he's we talked about before, he's the one that gets on the cover of the magazine. It's not like they need him to come up here and be a savior if that happens. If he comes up to help the team temporarily at third base, if Beltre's injury necessitates that, or come up and plays in first base, he won't be asked to step in and give the entire team a needed boost. He'll be asked to come in and do his job and be productive at maybe the lower half of the lineup and sort of ease him into things a little bit more than they had to do with Mazzara and Profar when they put them in key spots of the lineup. But yeah, I mean, it just speaks to the depth that this organization has right now and how they're able to withstand injuries and ineffectiveness and just plug someone else in there.
So what do you make of the return of Robinson Chirinos and what their overall plan is going to be to get your position?
It's really
pretty decent ones.
Yeah, it's tricky, and it's going to be unfortunate for somebody because all three catchers, from Chirinos as well as Holliday and Wilson, procedurally none of them can be sent to the minor leagues without clearing waivers. And so the odds seem to be pretty strong that one of those three is going to be gone from the organization shortly. They're not going to run with three catchers on the active roster for long. Just given productivity and history and recent usage, it seems like the signs are pointing to Holliday being the one that doesn't survive, which is a real shame. He's played really well. He's come up big at the plate. He's been good behind the plate. Appears to be a good teammate that fits really well, local kid. I just don't think he would clear waivers, which he would need to do in order to go to the minor leagues, because he's played well enough that someone's going to snap him up. So you may see Texas trading him so they can get something back instead of just losing him on waiver claim.
So the Rangers had their draft yesterday, and they took two high school pitchers with their first two picks. Is this consistent with their draft strategy? Is this kind of what you'd expect to see from them?
Yeah, well, I mean, their draft strategy, and it always has been, at least since John Daniels has been here, is to take, you know, the number one player on their board. And if that's, you know, if that's a shortstop, they would have taken a shortstop, even though they're pretty well healed there right now. They're just, you know, they clearly felt that the left-hander and the right-hander they took the first two rounds, they were the two players that they felt were highest on their board when their turns came to pick. So, yeah, as far as philosophy and strategy, doesn't surprise me at all. It sounds like that the left-hander is sort of has a starter profile. The righty will probably be developed as a starter, but maybe is eventually a late reliever. But they're both 18 years old, so we got years to see, you know, how those two develop, and we'll see how the rest of the draft develops. But I always feel very good on draft day with the Rangers. I think that they, you know, they grinded on the scouting side, and I think the philosophy of taking, you know, the best possible player and not worrying about need is the way to go.
Man, I think the best news from this entire, you know, past week has been Prince Fielder hitting one out. I mean, just the big fella, just to see him hopefully try to get this thing kick-started, because every Ranger fan, no matter what they're hoping for here, should absolutely hope for Prince Fielder to get it back to some degree. I mean, 4 years, $72 million remaining. They're going to have to hit for that even to be possible, and they're still going to have to eat money. If they don't want to trade him and they want to get the most out of that contract, what they're spending, then they need him to execute. And I just thought it was a real good sign to see him go yard.
It was, and you saw the hugs in the dugout. I mean, it was almost like he had just won a game, the way that his teammates responded to him. And, you know, they feel his pain. They know it's a struggle. He's a big part of that clubhouse, and his teammates are pulling for him, his coaches are. And you could just see the relief on his face and the happiness on everybody else's when he came to the dugout. And yeah, like you said, I mean, it's only good news if he starts to produce, you know, whether that – you know, whatever that means for his future with the Rangers or otherwise. It sure would be good to get him back on track a little bit. He doesn't need to produce at an MVP level. He just needs to be productive, you know, and justify his place in the lineup. And hopefully yesterday is a kickstart in that direction.
All right. And then last thing, you know, we've been riding such a Ranger high. I was worried the other day with the Yu Darvish injury and a Beltre injury that, oh my God, okay, now we're getting some payback here for how good it's been for so long, but luckily it's looking like those injuries are going to be pretty minor, right?
Well, you know, that's what it looks like right now. We go into every season feeling like Beltre is going to have a hamstring issue at some point that may cost him a few weeks, and that's who he is now, and hopefully this one doesn't cost him that much time. And if it does, you know, they'll survive it. Darvish is the bigger scare just because, you know, he's a few innings coming back from a lengthy layoff due to injury, and you never want to see the trainer come out for anybody. You especially don't want to see it for a starting pitcher who's just come back from surgery. Fortunately, there was not an elbow issue. Shoulders can be worse, and it looked like a shoulder, but Darvish said after the game it was actually his neck. But more importantly, he said after the game and then the following day doing a little bit of short toss that he's good to go for his next start Monday. So that's all good news, and you know, hopefully that's the only scare we have of there being possibly any sort of setback with him.
Awesome stuff, man. Hey, today was a quickie. I'm loving doing this podcast with you. We got a lot to talk about, but it's all positive, man, and I'm really enjoying talking Rangers baseball with you. He's the great Jamie Newberg. I'm Ben Rogers. This has been another episode of the Texas Rangers Spitballing Podcast. Until next time, happy baseball, everybody.